Welcome to episode 15 of Artist Materialist. I'm Susanna, an artist and graphic designer.
I'm Dan, a material scientist.
And today we are discussing the article, Where Are the Radical Politics of Cyberpunk? By Cameron Kunzelman in Waypoint. And I found this particularly interesting because I was very interested in cyberpunk back in the 80s when the genre first appeared. So discussions of where it is now fascinate me. How did you come across this?
This is another one to credit to long reads.
Ah, yes. You have some good stuff. So I was not initially aware of the Cyberpunk 2077 video game that's coming out and the controversy around it at E3, where people are debating whether or not this game is really cyberpunk. And that's something that I've seen around lately, is a discussion of, is this true cyberpunk? Has cyberpunk become co-opted? And this article tackles that question head on. Had you been aware of the video game?
I had not been aware of the video game. I don't follow video games too much, except sort of as a byproduct of reading stories on the broader group of blogs that includes Kotaku. And so I hear a little bit about video games. The main thing that I've heard of recently having to do with cyberpunk is a friend of mine recently had a very successful Kickstarter to do a Shadowrun board game. So that's the one thing that's had cyberpunk on my mind. And then I recently saw the new Blade Runner movie, which is certainly very much in the iconic cyberpunk realm. You could argue it's one of the five iconic things. It's certainly one of the five things that keeps coming up again and again when people talk about the genre. So I haven't had as much connection. Before that, I had mostly just read the book by Neal Stephenson, again, his Snow Crash novel, which is not as iconic as Neuromancer, which I've never read. And then all of the sort of associated things that are not considered core 80s cyberpunk, but all of the sort of things that go around it, you know, Philip K. Dick movies and short stories and all of that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will admit here, I haven't read Neuromancer either. It's one of those ones that I've meant to read and just haven't. I also have not seen the new Blade Runner movie, although the original, especially the original director's cut, is a favorite of mine. What did you find different or notable about the new one compared to the old?
So I barely remember the original, and I would say that it's, I think the reaction, my reaction to it is a little bit like my reaction to The Last Jedi, the more recent of the Star Wars movies, where there's a lot that happens, and I don't know how much of it goes together, but it was sort of like they wanted to put all these different set pieces in, and so they just made sure lots of things happened. And I
kind of like a James Bond movie.
Yeah, maybe a little like that, although more in the sort of epic adventure realm. And I can see how that shows up a lot, maybe in this discussion of cyberpunk, of the substance versus the appearance of it, and you know, to the extent that those seem to clash, which is very much in this, what this article is talking about how whether the visual appearance informs the world as opposed to taking away from the true grit of it. But I found that in the new Blade Runner movie, the most interesting part of it was actually something that was not in the original movie so much, but very much an evolution that you wouldn't have done in the 80s. And it's around this hologrammatic girlfriend that the main character has, which very much, you know, so now that we're 20 years, 30 years later, it makes sense that we think much more in terms of AI that doesn't necessarily need to be embodied. And that I thought was the most interesting part of the movie.
Well, that makes me think one thing that the original cyberpunk stuff kind of focused on was it was very much about the real world. There was, I mean, obviously there was, you know, Neuromancer, there are some things about the virtual world, mm-hmm. but a lot of it really focused on how technology affected the real world. I think that's just because at that point, we didn't have nearly as much experience with the virtual world as we do now.
Mm-hmm.
So necessarily anything that's created now that attempts to be cyberpunk is going to be informed by the internet and virtual reality and all that has happened over the last 30 years or so. There's no getting away from that.
Right. No, this is sort of goes to the big question about what, you know, other than it being maybe vaguely near or far future sci-fi, what makes something cyberpunk as opposed to just simply near or far future sci-fi in general? Whether, you know, are the novels of Cory Doctorow, are those cyberpunk? Is Ready Player One, is that cyberpunk? You could say no, not really. It's more of a, there's more something else. Is Mr. Robot cyberpunk? I don't know. It feels almost like to be cyberpunk, it has to have this 80s vibe, this sort of Reagan era gone amok, Japanese threat, mega corporation. That really seems to be core to the cyberpunk aesthetic.
To me, cyberpunk means more about augmenting humanity. It's about the individual. So a lot of the cyberpunk short stories that I remember reading, they were all about, you know, personal augmentation, becoming a cyborg, using drugs to enhance
mm-hmm.
your abilities, you know, dyeing your skin crazy glowing colors. It was all about personal autonomy via technology. And where it intersected with politics, really, I mean, I never, honestly, never thought of cyberpunk as a political thing. It was all about the rugged individual fighting against the machine, whether that machine is a literal machine
mm-hmm.
or a big corporation or an oppressive government.
Hmm.
So that's what I would call cyberpunk.
Okay, that makes sense. And the punk part certainly goes with this idea of this individualism, where there's so few people who are actively trying to be individuals that you can really describe it in terms of an anarchic philosophy. You know, it's sort of you against everyone else. So it really is anarchy from that perspective, which is very much a punk philosophy, and also very much does not scale to anything approaching. Once you have enough people together to call it politics, it probably doesn't hold together.
True. And I think, again, it's sort of where we were back in the 80s and the 70s. It was very much a time of, at least as far as technology was concerned, a lot of people didn't know what the latest technologies were. I mean, the people who were really into what would become the internet, who were into robots and things like that, they were on the fringes of society. They were mm-hmm. the geeks, the nerds, the weirdos. And it makes sense that they would have seen themselves as an individual fighting a declining society. But now it's kind of different because, you know, it's not that we don't have oppressive machines and corporations and all that still, but I've just seen more of a pivot to the idea of working together as a group instead of the rugged individual going it alone. People might still be augmented, they might still all be cyborgs, but they're cyborgs who work together to defeat whatever it is.
Right, and the whole concept of the internet as having this ability to bring that people come together from all corners of the earth on for all sorts of reasons, I think was not really part of the original cyberpunk. It was much more that you were even more isolated. There was no sense of connection between people, it makes me wonder how much of the ethos of a free internet is informed by the cyberpunk stories and whatnot about, well, we need to avoid this cyberpunk future, so we need to make sure that the internet is kept free.
That's an interesting question, because the internet was being created at the same time that all of this original writing was coming out. So I wonder how much it did influence them. It was the same people reading those stories who were creating the internet and using the early internet.
So in terms of the, going back to the punk and cyberpunk, one of the things that it made me think about is how the stories that it talks about, you know, the iconic things are all from the early 80s, but clearly a lot of it was from the 70s. And then it got popular starting in the 80s and then into the 90s. And it kind of went away for a while, it seemed. There wasn't as much about cyberpunk, but one of the things that sort of took over for a while that seems now on the decline is steampunk. And it's interesting to think about the differences between cyberpunk and steampunk and whether that informs the same sort of ideas and societal things in terms of sort of self-augmentation or around yourself. I see a connection, but I don't know if there's something else there.
Well, it's interesting you should mention that because I just finished a book by one of my favorite sci-fi authors, Alistair Reynolds, and I wouldn't call his work cyberpunk, but I would say that parts of his stories are definitely related to cyberpunk. I mean, the whole idea of the personal augmentation, the big bleak future that an individual is fighting against, there's a lot of that in his stories. I would say definitely he has some cyberpunk characters. And the book that I just read by him, which is called Terminal World, is sort of a thought experiment where he imagined, okay, how would I realistically or believably, not necessarily realistically, how would I believably make a future that is steampunk on Earth? And it's kind of wild and crazy and involves all these weird phenomena, how he got to that. But he imagines a world where part of the world is steampunk technology and they're, you know, getting around in blimps because regular internal combustion engines don't work. They can't fly planes and computers don't work and things, and electricity doesn't work in some places. And so you have this one character who is sort of a steam cyborg with all these hoses connected to like literally a calliope organ to keep him alive. It's an interesting look from an author who's used to creating these highly augmented cyborg characters at how it could be done using this different technology. And I don't know that, even though they share the word punk, I don't know that there's that much connection between the two genres. After having read that, it seems to me that the punk in steampunk is sort of a rejection of modern technology, maybe by people who are tired of being surrounded by screens and messages and emails and phones. And it seems to me to speak of a desire to reject all that and go back to a time when there was simpler technology. And that's the punk for steampunk, whereas cyberpunk is going completely the opposite direction, embracing technology as fully as possible, to the point of putting it inside your body.
It makes me wonder about, it seems that the punk is, that word is doing a lot of work in terms of sort of a rebellion. So it sounds like you're saying that steampunk is, it's a rebellion against the idea of using the technology around, and cyberpunk is, it's also a rebellion, but it's more of a rebellion against the modern society, but sort of it sets up society as the enemy by having it being sort of all powerful, and then you have to fight against it. Whereas in steampunk, you reject things by setting up an imaginary world almost where you disable a bunch of technologies through fanciful ways in order so that you can ignore all the bits that you don't want to deal with.
I think what you said about fighting against society, that pretty well encapsulates the idea of punk, don't you?
Yeah. So in going back to this article about the about using aesthetics in the wrong way, which is, I mean, they link to some things, and clearly there's a very gendered aspect of that.
Yes, I read that article too. I thought it was very interesting, especially with the issues that have been going on with science fiction awards recently and the discussions about traditional science fiction versus progressive science fiction.
And I think, you know, of course, with a video game, there's the whole Gamergate world. But it really seems that kind of what they, you know, there's what this article seems to be saying is sort of, how do you separate the aesthetic from the political, that and as you've been talking about in terms of personal augmentation, that there's really, maybe there's not much difference between the two, and trying to say that there's some essence of it, maybe there isn't a whole lot there. I don't know.
I think it's pretty simple to separate the aesthetics from the political, at least as far as cyberpunk is concerned, because really, if cyberpunk is about embracing technology as an individual to further your own ends, there are going to be as many different politics as there are individuals. So while the original creators of cyberpunk might not like it, they might think that you have to rebel in a particular way in order to be cyberpunk, I would argue that anyone who uses technology in a radical way, pushing it as far as possible to fight against an oppressive system, would be cyberpunk.
So that brings up something interesting, where I was trying to remind myself of some of these groups, and I was reading up a little bit about Shadowrun, and William Gibson, who wrote Neuromancer, his reaction to it, and he was saying that he did not care for Shadowrun because it sounds like they took Neuromancer and added elves. And he said, well, I don't like that, but probably the people who I took stuff from, they probably didn't like what I did with it. So what are you going to do?
And there you go. I mean, any kind of art is going to be co-opted by somebody else, and you might not like what they do with it.
Yeah. But this idea of the sort of embracing of technology, there's this tension, and some of the linked articles talk about it, right, where there's part of the joy of writing it, or especially, I imagine, making a video game about it, is showing how cool the different technologies are. But those are often positioned as being in being the products of an evil corporation. And then there's the individuals who are modifying that or doing their own take on it or hacking it. But there is this sort of like, isn't that cool, but also isn't that horrible?
And I think that's one part of cyberpunk that really still applies today. While the individual being in charge of everything, and like they said in here, it's not about the individual even succeeding in taking down the corporation. It's just about them managing to get out from under its thumb.
Mm-hmm.
And so that might have changed now, where we see more stories about groups of people actually taking down the big bad. But we still kind of have the same big bad as we did back in the 80s. You know, that hasn't changed much. If anything, it's become more obvious.
Although in the 80s, there really was this very particularly occasionally xenophobic focus on the large corporations of Japan specifically.
And that's true. And it's funny now to look back and see how worried people were, because shortly after that, Japan went through a terrible recession. Mm-hmm. And now they're just one of many global powers, and they're not quite so dominant as they were.
But still, the archetype for a city that is cyberpunk is really, it's really the Japanese, it's basically Tokyo. That's, you know, the further you get away from Tokyo, it's like, well, you're really corrupting what cyberpunk is supposed to look like, because it doesn't look like Tokyo.
That's true. It was very tied into a Japanese idea of the future. And I don't know that you could separate the cyberpunk aesthetic from that. That's a good point. One of the seminal cyberpunk works mentioned in the article is Ghost in the Shell.
Mm-hmm. Which I'm
looking at the pictures here from the video game, and maybe that's one of the problems with the aesthetics that's mentioned here, is I'm looking at the pictures and it looks like, you know, a future version of Mexico City or something. Florida. It does not look like Japan. It looks more like, you know, sort of a South American, dusty, post-apocalyptic place, not really so much dark, rainy Tokyo like in Blade Runner. I mean, it didn't take place in Tokyo, but that's what it looked like.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense with just sort of where things have gone. We realize that we're much more going to be tied into our current infrastructure. And you see that with the Blade Runner a little bit, the new Blade Runner, there's some connection to existing infrastructure. I mean, they still keep to the previous movie, but it is very much, it's like, maybe that's what they're sort of like, oh, you're bringing too many different cultural perspectives. You're not just doing, you know, Americanized Japan. Now you're looking at other places. And maybe some of that is just like, well, we realize that humanity, even if you're really going crazy, it's not going to turn into megalopolises like maybe we thought in the 80s. It just, that's not what happens.
Yeah. And also, traditionally, at least as far as American sci-fi is concerned, a lot of other groups have been left out. There is not a lot of consideration about African groups or Hispanic in science fiction. It is all, like you said, especially cyberpunk, is all very much, you know, a specific part of Asia and specific part of the United States. Whereas now I think there's a little more awareness that the world is bigger, and as it changes, it affects the whole world. I mean, look at the new Black Panther movie and all of the science fiction stuff that goes on in Wakanda. That's definitely very different mm-hmm. than something you would have seen even 20 years ago.
Well, and I can't remember it now, but there's at some point I have read at least one future sci-fi, slight dystopia. It's almost cyberpunk in some ways. It has some of the noir-ish elements as well. That was set in South Africa, and it's really, it was written by somebody who's from South Africa, so it's really has that perspective, and it does. You end up with different aesthetics, and just sort of things look a little bit different. But part of that is that it's saying, okay, we start with the what's already here and imagine what would happen in a future where certain things happened, and it's just never going to look like Tokyo.
And I actually enjoy reading science fiction written by different people around the world because it gives such a different perspective on what the future is going to look like. For example, the TV series 3% that is Brazilian, it has a very Brazilian dystopia.
Yes.
And I thought that was really interesting to look at how they imagined a dystopian sci-fi future. One thing that they keep mentioning, I know Bruce Sterling is big on this particular part of cyberpunk, is how pharmaceuticals figure into it. It's cyberpunk is not just technology. It's not just, attaching a robot arm to your body. It's also about using drug technology to enhance your abilities or to change the way you look or things like that. And that's something that often seems to get overlooked. I know that was in the cyberpunk short stories I read because pharmaceutical technology back in the late 70s, early 80s was changing rapidly. And so that was something that sci-fi authors were thinking about. And I don't know, have you read much in science fiction where recent science fiction that talks about pharmaceuticals as technology?
I'm not sure, but it certainly makes sense to me that I do know that in video games at various times there's always been this sense that there's this in video games you have boosts which have often been, wink wink nod nod some sort of drug. But I can imagine also that especially in movies, that was excised, and so the people who, and so some of the most popular things, the original story might have even had that part in, and then they took it out, or modified it, just because of the war on drugs kind of thing. But sure, actually, or maybe not. It's I'm thinking about there's a movie. So there's Johnny Mnemonic, and there's another. There's some another cyberpunk movie, which is very much actually that's often the main plot, which very tied into the 80s war on drugs, is that what these either the corporation is imposing some sort of drug, or you have the people going around the edges selling drugs. And I like RoboCop, which you could also say is it's more of a tech dystopia, but it still has that. This war on drugs element of it. And I guess the authors are probably more interested in the mind expanding parts of the possibilities of drugs. But I don't know. I think what ended up sticking is much more of this other part of it. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good point, is that at the time they were writing, there was a lot more optimism about drugs than there is now, having lived through all of the problems that we've seen.
Well, it seems right now there's a lot of optimism around drugs, especially in Silicon Valley and all sorts of nootropics and smart drugs and all sorts of things like that. So it's very much among that crowd, it's very popular.
Oh, well, maybe we'll see a change then in science fiction as people come around to imagine, like you said, the smart drugs, things that are tailored individually to the particular person's genetics and stuff like that. I know in a lot of science fiction I've seen recently, People are healed by nanobots instead of drugs. That seems to be more palatable.
Well, you have movies like Limitless, or like that one Scarlett Johansson movie, where she becomes sort of invincible by taking drugs. So
I know what one you're talking about, yeah.
so there's it's an ongoing it that keeps coming back. It's sort of a simple drug that creates things, the powers. So I think that'll always be with us, and that's one sideline of it.
So if you had to pick one recent science fiction book or movie or TV series that you've seen that you would say is an era of cyberpunk, what would you say?
Well, I'm mostly I watch more than I read. I would say that it's just from when with the emphasis on the cyber, it's hard to beat Mr. Robot. Especially the first season of Mr. Robot is really it's maybe too realistic and too near future, but it's very has the punk and the cyber both.
And I guess I would probably pick Black Mirror. While it's not, well, I guess it is kind of, I guess you could call that science fiction, but the sort of the dystopia and, like you said, the noir aspect of it and the cautionary tales about technology, but at the same time, the embrace of technology. I think that Black Mirror is very much in the realm of cyberpunk.
Thank you for joining us. You can please visit our blog at artistmaterialist.wordpress.com. Rate and review wherever you've been listening, and share with a friend if you think they'd find interesting. Thank you.